Welcome to Studio B Live.
Hey, Dave, this is Santiago Wallace. I love your show. I'm calling from Orange City, Florida. I'm wondering about oleanders. How poisonous, I know they're poisonous, the whole part of the tree is poisonous. How about the nectar? And is it diluted, meaning if I have a large source of other sources, nectar sources available, if it's diluted enough, can you give me some, shed some light on that for me? Thank you very much.
All right. Thank you, San Diego, for calling us today and asking that good question about toxicity of particular plants that produce nectar from those plants. Are they toxic? Would it be bad to eat honey from plants like oleander? Good question. Before I answer that, let me welcome you today to Studio B Live. We thank you for tuning in today. Studio B Live is brought to you by Long Lane Honeybee Farms, our honeybee operation, and we're David and Sherry Burns bringing you this daily broadcast. Always good to have you along with us, and if you'd like to check out our website, we're located on the internet at honeybeesonline.com. That's honeybeesonline.com. And if you want to be like San Diego and call in, you can simply call 217-427-2430 and ask your question. It will be recorded to be played on our upcoming broadcast. We'd love to have more of you call in and ask some questions. See if you can stump me with a big whopper question. You can never stump me. I mean, because if you ask a question, I always have an answer. It might be, I don't know. I don't have a clue. And regarding the toxicity of honey, the nectar that some plants produce, you know what? It seems in my research that the jury is still out on that one. I did some research. We have honey locust trees near our house that my bees love. And, of course, honey locust, the nectar from honey locust trees, it is not toxic. But in my research, I found that the bark, the tree bark can be if it's eaten. And I thought, well, that's interesting. I didn't know that. I don't plan on eating any tree bark anytime soon, and so I don't have to worry about that, and it's probably why you're not aware of that fact either. We don't eat tree bark. That question has been asked before, not of me, but I've seen it in different bee forums and magazines about oleander honey, and there are plenty of people that say that it is toxic, but that... the research shows that it probably isn't. Nothing indicates that it is, as far as we know. The sap from oleander is said to be poisonous, the sap, but most people don't believe it. And I think the conclusion that most people draw is that if the nectar was poisonous, that it would kill the bees for eating it. And if it doesn't kill the bees, it doesn't hurt anybody else. It must not be poisonous. But along these lines, there are the same thing said about other plants as well. Some people say that mountain laurel can produce toxic honey. Some people say that rhododendrons and azaleas have some type of poisonous nectar, and if you eat this honey from these plants, you'll go crazy, or, you know, I've heard all these kind of tales before. I don't want to give a certain answer here because I really don't know, but from my research, I do not find any strong evidence to indicate that the oleander honey has any toxicity level, would cause any harm in it at all. In fact, what you said too was good. You know, if it's diluted with other honey, maybe it's not a big deal. So it must not be, because if it was, then we would all know about it. It'd be very scary. So generally in my neck of the woods, it seems like my bees know how to bring in the good honey. And I think that's probably true where you live too. The bees are going to do good bringing in all honey that is safe. I've heard people argue about, you know, poison ivy plants, and what if bees go on to poison ivy blooms and so forth. And again, I just wouldn't give that much worry. I wouldn't worry about it. If you want to, you want to play it safe, take some pictures of these suspect plants to your hives and have a little talk with them. Maybe you'll draw a big red X through these particular plants and you can say, hey, you gals, stay away from poison ivy, oleander, rhododendrons, and azaleas, and because I don't want any of that honey in my hive. I guess you could have a talk with them and show them pictures and, you know, maybe you'll have good results. But if you want to, you can just not worry about it. I don't think it's going to be a problem. Most of us have never heard of that being an issue. Good question, and thanks for calling in. Again, if you want to call in, our number here at Studio B Live is 217-427-2430. Hey, let me answer some emails and give you some other good things that I've found out recently on bees in the news. How many of you think that by eating a bit of honey every day, it's healthy for you? Well, if you think that, you're right. In fact, I read this article in the Star Phoenix on December the 5th. It says a spoonful of honey brings metabolic stressors down, and with it, chances of developing diseases such as diabetes, Alzheimer's, and osteoporosis, says a leading honey researcher, Ron Fessenden, a retired physician and author from Denver, Colorado, says the health benefits of honey are real and can be used to improve the health of the general public. Speaking Tuesday at the Saskatchewan Beekeepers Association convention, he said that honey lowers blood sugar levels, which reduces metabolic stress. He says honey actually has a very significant stabilizing effect on blood sugar that's counterintuitive to most individuals who think it's sort of like saying, well, I'm going to eat some bacon to help control my cholesterol, and that's not true about honey. Honey, which is made from two sugars, facilitates the production of liver glycogen, Frensden said. Liver glycogen fuels the brain, but only has enough stores for about 8 hours, he continued. The human body produces cortisol when the brain runs out of glycogen. And when cortisol is released, he said, it triggers metabolic stress. Obesity, insulin-resistant diabetes, cardiovascular disease, hypertension, in young women, hyperthyroid conditions, osteoporosis, about 10% of all cancers, Alzheimer's disease, Parkinson's disease, neurodegenerative conditions, which are impacted by high blood sugar levels over several decades, all of these things are reduced or eliminated by the elimination of metabolic stress by the reduction of cortisol levels, he said. In short, he said, honey keeps the brain happy. Wow, that's pretty cool to know, isn't it? So you think about taking a hit of honey a day, keep the doctor away? Well, the doctor says it probably will. It'll help you in a lot of different areas. Here's another article that I found today coming from Ohio, a state not too far from me. It says that OSU students, faculty drawn to Bee Lab sweet products. This is from December the 15th, Monday, that's today. And this is from the Columbus Dispatch. It says plenty of people are going apiary for honey and other hive products sold by Ohio State University. Fresh batches of goods produced by the OSU Honeybee Laboratory in Worcester and its partners drew swarms of students and faculty members last week to the French Field House on the Columbus campus. And here's a quote from the old Union Assistant Director Beth Ulam. She said, I've wanted to buy from the lab forever. And it says she spent $146 on honey, candy, soap, candles, lotions, and lip balm. She says, I've missed their sales every year, and so I'm making up for it today by taking one of everything, she said, filling a shopping basket during her lunch hour. Well, the article goes on to say that for 19 years, honey products have been sold in Worcester and Columbus late in the year. More recently, they have been offered year-round through honeybeelab.com, with sales scheduled for Wednesday and Thursday, the public has two more chances to size up the goods in person. So those of you living in Ohio near Worcester can go to the bee lab there and get some good stuff out of the beehive. Let me read some more. I liked what the article goes on to say. It says, proceeds provide the bulk of operating money for the lab, which houses 6 million bees for study and for the population of crops in Ohio and neighboring states. And this is a quote from the lab coordinator, Sherry Farrell. I like to show people you can find honey and products from the hive and other things beside your typical jar of honey. One of her favorites is the Christmas tree ornaments made of beeswax. When I read that, I thought, wow, I never thought of that one. That's pretty cool. Christmas ornaments made of beeswax. The sales leader is honey, which is made in Worcester and available in dozens of varieties and flavors. And one of the things she says, too, in the article is that... let me find that part of the article where she said, much of the honey that is produced in the United States by major packers, honey packers, blend their honey with Chinese or Argentina honey, and there is a taste difference in that. She says, of course, the honey they sell is raised right there in Ohio. A 5-pound jug of honey is priced at $20. And that's what we sell ours for, too. So there you go. There's a little bit of activity going on in the state of Ohio at the University there of Ohio. At the Bee Lab, they're selling some honey and some Christmas ornaments made of wax, made of beeswax and other things this Wednesday and Thursday. Check it out if you're in that area. Sure, it'd be beneficial to you. All right, what else we got going on here in the way of fun things to read about? How about some email? I've got a ton of email. All right. David, I found your website. Really enjoyed the beekeeping lessons. Want to start beekeeping this year? How much extra, if any, honey will a new package of bees produce? Does the drawn comb go bad and need to be replaced? If so, how often? Also, I'd like to know more about producing honeycomb. What is involved and do I need to purchase special equipment? I live about 200 yards from a creek. Do I need to provide my bees with additional water sources? This is from Tim. Good question. Not sure where he's from. Well, I'll tell you, Tim, this is typically what we say about the first year of bees. A brand new beehive is not to be expected to produce much, if any, extra honey. The reason is they use the extra honey, they produce wax. They're not storing as much honey as they are consuming it to make wax. They make the wax, of course, for the building up of their own comb in their two deep boxes. They have to produce a lot of wax, and it takes a lot of nectar, eating nectar to produce the wax. And some of you may know the answer to this question: how much nectar does it take to produce a pound of wax, of beeswax? Call in today if you know the answer to that. I'll try to remember to tell you tomorrow. All right, so yeah, they're not going to make much honey that first year. However, as most of you know me, I get out there and I coach my bees, my first year hives, to really make honey for me. There's ways that you can do it. Don't have time to go into it right now. But typically, no, don't expect anything the first year. Experienced beekeepers with drawn comb essentially can do it, but a first-year beekeeper probably not going to expect much. What's some more questions here? Let's see. Does the drawn comb go bad and need to be replaced? Go bad? Doesn't go bad. It can get dark and dark and dark and dark and darker and darker and darker until it's really, really black and brittle. And at that point, yeah, we say, we need a fresh batch of wax in there, you know. And it is true that certain brood diseases, such as American foul brood and maybe European foul brood, tend to seem to vegetate more, I guess. Seems to grow more on the older comb. And I don't know if that's just because there's more spores on it. that may finally get a hold of growing. But a practice is, and that one that we advocate, is to remove some of your comb, have a comb removal plan, where every year you can take out one third of your old comb and let them build new comb, and that way you kind of stay fresh. So yeah, we say after about 3 years, you need to kind of let them build new comb, get that old 3 year combs out of there. If you're using Pureco plastic foundation, just pop it out, scrape off the old comb, put it back in. If you're using the wax frame, then you have to take the frame apart. You have to scrape all your little edges and the grooves out with a special groove scraper. It's tedious. That's why we advocate plastic Pureco foundation that's got beeswax on it. Very easy to clean up and put it back in there again. All right. I told you how often to do it, every 3 years. I'd like to know more about producing honeycomb. Yeah, honeycomb is great. Woohoo! Everybody loves to produce honeycomb. We manufacture, Tim, a special frame that you'll really like. It looks like a regular super frame, but it's sized up a little bit differently, and it has three pieces of wood in the middle, and the bees just love it. Got pictures on some of my websites about it. But my father-in-law came up with the idea of putting these pieces of wood in the middle of the frame so that they make nice little squares of honeycomb. And because they connect it to the wood, you can cut right up next to the wood, cut four sections out, and you never have to open up any cells. And it's really neat. Oh, we did so good with this year. They fill it up so fast, it's incredible. You know, if I was a rich man, I'd probably patent the idea. but, you know, I'm not worried about making a buck off that. We're trying to manufacture some for next year. We only manufactured enough for ourselves last year. Hopefully we can make enough to sell these. So get back in touch with us, Tim. And there are a lot of different companies that produce these honeycomb frames, like boxes, rounds and squares and plastic and wood. And, you know, they always say that you're a really good beekeeper if you can get your bees to make some Ross rounds. Some people say the bees just don't like to draw a comb out in these special containers. So these frames really work good for us. So that's what you need, special equipment for making that comb, honey. Yeah, you do. Another thing we used to do in years past, we would just put an empty super frames in a super and let them draw the comb, fill it up, seal it off, and we would take it back and cut it. We would cut that out. Remember, it has no foundation, and there you go. You can cut it and put it in these little plastic containers and sell it. Now, I shy away from the wax comb foundation for comb honey. To me, it's too thick. When I'm chewing it, I get into that mid-rib section where it's thicker that the bee's built from, and it's like chewy, chewy, too chewy. So I don't like to use that. Okay, let's see. Live about 200 yards from a creek. Do I need to provide my bees with any additional water source? Yeah, why not? All right, it wouldn't hurt a thing. Bird baths are cheap. Get a plastic bird bath. Put it between the bees and your nearest neighbor's swimming pool, and you'll have happy neighbors, and they'll have a very happy swimming pool, both the bees and your neighbors. All right, here's another question from Bill. Bill says, great website, wanted to get in touch early. I've been wanting to get into bees for years. Time of life is right for me now. I'm located in Cessna Park and Watsega, that's in Illinois, just north of me, maybe an hour. Says I've been in contact with, mentioned some people here. I think this person's going to mentor me. More than likely would like to take your bee class, get some supplies and bees from you. So he's asking about how much are your classes, when do I register? You're 50 minutes away, it's handy, no freight, and so forth. So yeah, Bill, come on up and be a part of our class. I think we do have a handful, well, maybe a couple of openings left for our class. It's going to be February the 21st, all day, Saturday, 9 to 3, and lunch is provided. The cost is $85 to register, and you can call in with a credit card and register or send a check. The number for those of you wanting to beat Bill's registration is 217-427-2678. We give these spots out to the first paying registrants, so your payment assures you a spot. In other words, you can't call up and say, yeah, hold me a space, I'll be there. Yeah, I'm sorry, I can't do that. Plans change and we lose a spot that way. All right, oh boy, yikes, here's a huge list of questions from Greg in New Mexico. Let me see, I can cut through some of these. He's asking particular frame questions. Well, he says, what size frames do you use? Can I use this kind of foundation? Do you make cedar or pine bottoms? We make pine. All of our hives are made out of pine. What size medium supers do you use? We use the 6 5/8 medium Illinois super. And can the hives be ordered with an additional super? Absolutely. How much are your nooks? We sell about 50 nooks. That's all I give out. 50 nooks a year. And I sell them for $120. Sounds like a lot, but hey, a package bee. Packages of bees are 75, and they don't even have any drawn comb, and the queen is mated, but she's not laying yet. They're in a cage for $75. So if you buy a five-frame nook with drawn comb on five frames, with honey in it, with nectar in it, with larvae, with eggs, a queen that's been laying in that box, you get the box, the frame, I'm going to charge more than a package, so it's $120. What breed of bee do you sell? Good question. You know, we're not real particular about that. Neither should you be. Just because the name Italian is attached to your bee doesn't mean a thing. Depends on who the Italian was mated with, what drones, what characteristics the drones had that she mated with. You can have a bad Italian. You can have a good Italian, a bad Carniolan, a good Carniolan. You can have a good Buckfast, a bad Buckfast. You know, so I'm comfortable with mutts. I like mutts. I don't go all that crazy about the different breeds of bees. There are some different characteristics, of course, in some, and that's why we do implement. But probably from our bee yard, mainly the genetic traits would lean toward Carniolan and Italian. I believe, as a lot of people do, that Carniolans winter much better than the Italian bee, because the Carniolan doesn't take as big of a cluster into the winter. The Italian takes everybody, their whole family, their relatives, their kin from hundreds of miles away, and they had to feed everybody in this big Italian box with all their family, some Italian music maybe, and they eat a lot during the winter. They can eat themselves out of house and home, unfortunately. Carniolans don't quite do that. Carniolans build up faster in the spring than the Italian does as well. So there's some benefits to the Carniolan. But, yeah, we definitely lean toward the darker Carniolan bee. Are they hygienic and can they keep a clean hive? Well, again, I gave a talk recently on a broadcast, and I gave out a bee lesson on that. You have to read that, Greg. All bees are somewhat well-groomed. They keep the hive looking nice. Not all of them are hygienic, meaning that they don't all clean out the larva that has a problem, such as brood disease or mites. Some do, some don't. And this next spring, yes, we're implementing the hygienic tests on the queens and only grafting from hives that do prove to be hygienic. Are they gentle? Yes. In our opinion, they're gentle. They're a lot more gentle than I've seen a lot of people's bees. And we do try to only graft from our gentle hives. But they're honeybees. And, you know, honeybees are gentle to a point, obviously. They have a stinger for a reason. That's like saying, is a rose gentle? Sure, a rose is gentle. If you fall on a rose bush, it's not gentle. If you get into a beehive and act carelessly or drop a frame, you know, or disturb them in a way that's irritable, no, they're not gentle. I hope that answers your question. I believe the gentleness of the honeybee lies largely in the beekeeper and his or her skill in actually inspecting a hive, using a little bit of smoke. I don't wear gloves. Sometimes don't even wear a hat and a veil. And I just know the days to work them and how to work them. Are they good honey producers? Yeah, I mean, you know, bees are bees. Are they low propolis producers? I would say that our bees, I've got a few hives that I can tell produce more propolis than others, but I don't mind because they're the good ones. They produce a lot of honey, and they control their mites, and I'm not sure if it's because of the propolis that they are able to do that, but some produce more than others. But when I say a lot of propolis, I don't mean like it's oozing out. I just mean you see more than in some hives. Are they brood disease and varroa and tracheal mite resistant? Well, goodness, if anybody can make a queen do that, that person would be a millionaire, billionaire. There is no such thing as a honeybee that's resistant to mites or diseases any more than a human is. There might be some time that they're resistant. They may be more resistant, meaning somewhat resistant, but no. Totally resistant, absolutely not. Nobody's free of that. You're going to find mites almost in every hive. Probably every hive is going to have mites. And there are some people who claim there are always American foul brood spores in every hive. The bees keep it under control. But I would say, again, Greg, the hives that we graft our queens from, they do have to be free of any brood disease. And though they may show signs of mites, they're able not to be slowed down or hindered or overcome or infested by mites. Do they have a low swarming tendency? I guess he's asking about our queens that we produce. And yeah, we actually will not produce queens from a hive that shows a lot of swarming tendencies. Are they prone to rob? Well, the Italians are robbers, no doubt. In the fall, they're going to rob. The Carnolians are not so apt to rob. And so by making a mixture of that, we don't feel that that's a real issue. But bees are bees. And if the bees think they can get some nectar without a big fight, they're probably going to do it, especially during a dearth or low nectar flow. Do they have a good spring buildup? Yes, the Carnolians do. Are they early morning bees? I'd say average. It just depends on the weather, depends on what's out there, and how fast they get going in the morning. And he says, have I ever sold these queens into New Mexico or Colorado? Absolutely, but I don't remember exactly where. He says, I understand honeybees obviously produce delicious honey, but they are also necessary for the food we eat. Over the last few years, the plight of the bees caught my attention with recent bee losses. I would like to know what I can do to bring them back and would enjoy having honey from my backyard. Well, Greg, that's great. No problem there. You are right on, friend. This is how we restore the honeybee population in America. More people like yourself becoming beekeepers. And yes, you're going to enjoy that honey coming from your backyard. All right, here's John writing in. As a beginner beekeeper for 3 years, I've thoroughly enjoyed your website. I just happened to stumble across it and couldn't stop reading it. I've gained so much information from it. Well, thank you, John. He goes on to say, presently, I have 24 hives. Yes, I grew rapidly. I'm hooked on beekeeping, and I find myself in need of setting up a honey house so I can get out of my basement. My question is, what do I need? I have a 20-frame extractor and an uncapping knife. But other than that, I use 5-gallon pails, a freezer with a couple of light bulbs to warm up the paled honey so I can filter and jar it. I read about setting tanks both heated and non, about a baffle system for skimming wax from honey, bottling machines, honey pumps, and even uncapping machines, but I'm not sure how to use them in the whole process. I guess what I'm wanting to do is build a honey house and make things less labor intense. Any personal advice would be much appreciated, or even suggestions of possible websites that would help me out would be of great value. Thanks again for the time and effort you put into your website. And he is from Canada. Hey, thanks, John. and cheers to you from Canada. 24 hives basically does put you kind of on the border of like, well, that single uncapping knife is going to give you carpal tunnel syndrome. Woo! maybe not, but it's going to make you really get a cramp in your hand. I can't imagine. If you've got a good year, Canada has some great clover fields and honey production there. And you could have a whopper year of those 24 hives, and I cannot imagine going through those frames and cutting them by hand. I'll tell you what I did, all right? Maybe you can get some clues from what I did. Keep your ear to the ground. Try to find an old automatic uncapping machine. You can buy them new, but they cost a fortune. And for 24 hives, you're gonna have to make a lot of honey to pay for itself, a brand new one. Find a used one. I found a used one that was probably in need of everything. You know, all the bearings were locked up, froze up, dried up. Chains needed to be replaced. But the basic motors and my blades, all that was good. The frame was good. You know, of course, there's no rust. It's usually made out of stainless steel. But so I just bought it at a very low price, and just I spent one entire year. These things are complicated, and I spent one entire year taking it apart, nut by nut, bolt by bolt. I mean, I was crazy. My son thought I'd never get it back together, but I cleaned every single nut and bolt. I sanded. I used wire brushes that you put in grinders to clean things, and I had to buy, you know, buying parts like that are pretty cheap. Bearings and bushings and things are pretty cheap, and so I replaced all of that. Got it running great. Works super. That would be one way you can uncap quickly. In fact, give you an idea, I can put 10 medium super frames into this uncapping machine, and it will uncap 10 frames of medium super frames, both sides, open them completely up in less than 60 seconds. So that's 60 seconds of super. And if you do the math and see what you're spending on, you know, using the hot knife on as many hives that you do, well, then you can see that you can do it a lot faster. But if you keep your ear to the ground and try to find a used uncapping machine, subscribe to American Bee Journal or the Bee Culture magazines, the trade magazines of beekeeping, and watch the back. You can see some of these things for sale sometimes. And occasionally you can hit a gold mine. You can find a nice little old person that maybe is up in age, and maybe her husband had one of these things. She doesn't even know what it is. She's tired of walking around it and willing to sell it for $20. I mean, you hear those stories every now and again. But other than that, you're just going to have to do it by hand. Incorporate some of your friends. Have a uncapping party. Call up the grandkids. I mean, you know, if you're not going to be able to get the automated equipment, invest in two or three more uncapping knives, and it paid for itself by the free labor of your neighbors just having fun helping you. So you can try that. Now you talked about settling tanks and baffling systems. You can do that, and it's beneficial. I don't use a baffling system. I've thought about it. I don't use it per se. And here's how my system works. Beneath my automated uncapper, I immediately have a basket that collects the cappings that fall. They fall into a basket. Below this basket, the basket actually sits in, it's a long trough, a long stainless steel tank that sits below all of this. So in this screen basket where my uncappings are, they drip honey, but they're dripping into this big bucket below all this stuff. Well, this big bucket, it's a huge tank. It's 6 or 8 feet long, maybe 3 feet wide, maybe a foot or two deep, you know? And so, holds a lot of honey. Well, when the honey drips in this, I do have a honey pump. And again, I bought it for dirt cheap, took it apart, repacked the bearings, and saved $1 million. But they're not that bad. I think you can pay, well, they're all pretty pricey. The pump and the motor is around $1,000 brand new. But you can make them. You can buy the pump separate and make, you know, buy a motor and put them on there. You don't need a big motor. But these have to be food grade quality pumps. Not, you know, you don't want to use something that's not food grade. So anyway, I've got a float valve that's got a rod and a plunger. So when my tank below my uncapper fills up. Oh, and by the way, the honey goes, it comes out of my extractor into this tank, into this holding tank. But you have to remember that wax rises to the top. Bee wings rise to the top. Dust rises to the top. Skim rises to the top. Air bubbles rise to the top. So in this big tank below my uncapper, the honey's being dumped into this. But I've got a pickup pipe on the very bottom. And so with this float valve, when it gets to a certain height, the float kicks the pump on. Now, this float valve works in two stages. When the tank gets full, it kicks the pump on. But when the tank gets about 2 inches from my pickup point, it shuts the pump off because I don't want to pick up the wax, the bubbles, the bee wings, the bee legs. So this is kind of a way to, it's an initial settling tank, all right? Because it settle, the stuff settles to the top and you can only draw off the bottom. It's pumped into a larger 500-gallon tank, which is, again, a great settling tank for me. Because in this 500-gallon tank, I only tap off the bottom. Here's what I did with the 500-gallon tank. I just bought a used milk tank, these huge dairy milk tanks. They're, you know, it's on a big, I mean, they're heavy. I think it's at least a ton in weight. It's on a big stand, you know. But these dairy tanks have a refrigerant system, a coil system. They're doubled wall. And what I do is, what I've done, I've actually used those. I've had to do some pipe fittings and such, but I actually pump hot water, warm water, into this refrigerant coils. It doesn't have any refrigerant in it anymore. But I just pump hot water in between the wall, the outside and inside wall of this honey tank. And I can keep my honey whatever temperature I want, maybe 70 degrees, so it doesn't get hard in the wintertime, maybe 80, you know. Just keep it a certain temperature that you want it to keep at, stored in this 500-gallon tank. And it really makes a good settling tank. And again, you can pick up these old tanks. You can watch eBay. You can pick up these tanks from dairy farmers that are wanting to get rid of them. Sometimes just for a song, they're glad to get rid of them, but they're really great. I love them. So I cut corners this way. I usually don't buy the tanks from manufacturers that make them for honey because then they're, you have to pay more. The bottling process, yeah, you know, the bottling machine, that's a couple of $1,000, $1,500 to $2,000 for the bottling system. So most of us don't really use that. We just, we actually have, out of the 500-gallon settling tank, it goes into a, I think it's a 25 to 35-gallon stainless steel tank, and it settles in there. We bottle out of that tank. I've got a stainless steel valve, a non-drip valve that drips. But anyway, it's called a dripless valve, but it drips a little bit. But we bottle directly out of this. We do it by hand, and it's pretty fast. And you can have a lot of hives and still use this system like this. And save up your money for the bottling machine. Let's see, what else did you ask? Well, that's the whole process on how you can do it. Probably, I would say, John, that what you ought to do for a while is do it by hand. Your 5-gallon pails are fine. Use the 5-gallon pail filters on top, and you get enough of those filters, enough of those 5-gallon pails. You'll do fine. You can do a lot. You can put some gates on the bottom of some of those pails and bottle from those pails. You can buy the plastic gates, and they're not that bad, and away you go. You'd have a good time doing that. All right? All right. Well, thank you for the comments, too, about enjoying our website, John. Sorry I spent so much time talking about that, but that was kind of fun, going through how you set up your honey house. And by the way, the I kind of know what I, if I don't address something, you will write in and ask me or call me about it. The baffling system, it baffles me. Well, it doesn't really baffle me, but it baffles the honey. It's a way of making baffles in a settling tank. So it just basically kind of slows down the movement of honey and causes more of the bubbles and wax to rise to the top by having baffles along the way. All right? I never heat honey, by the way, when I process it. All right, this is Stephen. He says, David, I am reviewing your website, attempting to determine what I need to purchase in order to start beekeeping bees. I live in the U.S. Virgin Islands, and bees are active year-round. My location raises some questions. Can I purchase bees from you and have them shipped here? As bees are active here in the winter, can I get honey from there year-round? Would I use the same type of equipment as in the United States? I am a principal at a school, and if possible, would like to use bees as part of an agricultural class. That's a good question. I tell you, Stephen, I'm not that well knowledgeable of the Virgin Islands. I do know that there are some. Well, in fact, I believe the United States supports a large grant support. Beekeeping in the Virgin Islands in the $100,000 range. I don't know what year that was. I don't know if it was this year or in the past, but I do remember reading that. So, yeah, you can use the same equipment, of course. And whether or not we can send you bees, I would have to look at customs, I think, and find out for sure. But we'll check into that. And good luck to you, Stephen. It sounds great that you can get your students involved in beekeeping. All right, let me look at this one. This is Jeff. He says, I've been studying and reading and preparing for beekeeping for 2 years. He says, my son-in-law and I were pushing each other toward a spring start. Then I started listening to your podcast and decided to join the Mississippi Beekeepers Association. I read a slight mention of the Mississippi State Reimbursement Program in passing, but it wasn't until I heard you talking about it that I really got the fever. So now the whole family is ready to start. I don't know if you realize by the news coverage, but contrary to popular belief, Hurricane Katrina did not hit New Orleans. It came ashore at Long Beach, Mississippi. We have a small blueberry farm and vineyard here and have not seen a honeybee since Katrina blew through over 3 years ago. Well, that's sad. I understand what you're saying, where the eye of the hurricane hit, the center of the hurricane of Jeff, and that certainly it did do a lot of significant, terrible damage into New Orleans, but I know what you're saying about Mississippi. A lot of people just kind of don't think of it in terms of the other coastal states there. He says over 3 years ago. So he says they have, the bees have basically been silent over the last 3 years. We have several feral hives and tree trunks that we enjoy watching, but they are gone with the wind. Huh. And we do give a dime, too, don't we, that they're gone with the wind. As down-home and personal as your show is, well, it is because I just made reference to Gone with the Wind in a silly way. That's pretty personal. Pretty down-home, too. As personal and down-home as your show is, it has really inspired me to move on this. I've also learned things from listening to you that I did not get from books and websites that I've read. For this, I'm truly grateful and ask that you keep up the good work. Well, thank you, Jeff. And we look forward to really helping you as much as we can restore the bee population in Mississippi and get things restored there. Well, I'm tired of answering mail, or else I'm ready for lunch or something. Hey, let me one more thing before we move on. In fact, why don't we pause, play a little music, not a lot of music, just some drum rolls or guitar or something, okay? Start that guitar music up. That's good. And let's just wait a second. All right. Okay, that's cool. I'll give you a little break. Okay, we can stop the music now. Stop the music! Fade it out slowly or something. Okay, I wanted to share with you a report from Illinois. Just to give you a kind of a pulse, this is from the Illinois State Beekeepers Association. The Department of Agriculture, of course, has a beekeeping inspection program here. We have lots of inspectors that inspect hives, and every year they make reports on what they find when they're inspecting hives. I'd like to share that with you today, just so you'll know a little bit about Illinois beekeeping. Total number of beekeepers in the state of Illinois is 1,329. 1,329 beekeepers in the state of Illinois. All right. Number of apiaries in the state of Illinois. Let me give you a grand total here. In the year 2000, the grand total of colonies was 18,821. Now, you know, that's significantly, let's see. Yeah, that's a little bit lower than last. Well, 2006, we had 20,000. Now we're down to 18,000. Get this, though. In the year 2005, we had 27,000 honeybee hives in Illinois. 27,000. The biggest year that I see on here, to give you a perspective of the mites, in 1988, there were 37,000 hives in Illinois. And, of course, the mites hit in the late 80s and the early 90s. And the mites can be attributed here by taking their toll, because in the year 1996, there were only 16,000 beekeepers. So it didn't take long for the mites to really wipe a lot of beekeepers out. Okay, so 18,821 beehives in the state of Illinois. In my state, by the way, I'm in Vermilion County, Illinois. Let me see if I can find that on my printouts here. Vermilion County has 204 colonies, 26 of us in Vermilion County keeping bees. Huh, that's interesting. Hey, what about, let's see, I had a report here on diseases. Let me see if I can find that for you. Thankfully, no reports of colony collapse disorder in Illinois. That's good. We do have small hive beetle. Fortunately, small hive beetle is being contained pretty well, not being a really bad problem in Illinois. Currently, we have 17 counties in Illinois that are isolated reports of small hive beetle. All right, let's see. Oh, I don't see my sheet on diseases. Did I pass that up? I remember seeing it talking about American foul brood and mites. Let's see if I can find that for you. Oh, here we go. I knew I had it. All right, in 2007, number of colonies with American foul brood, 23. Number of colonies with European foul brood, 7. These are the ones checked, of course. Number of colonies with chalk brood, 24. Number of colonies with varroa mites, 157. Tracheal mites, 1. A little bit misleading. I mean, because, you know, tracheal mites, I guess a person would have to request that their mites be tested, the esophagus pulled out, looked under a microscope. Probably most beekeepers don't do that. I don't do it. And a beekeeper must have, and they must have found one. And same true is with varroa mites. I said 157 colonies had varroa mites. Well, gee whiz. No doubt 18,000 hives had varroa mites, for sure. It's impossible not to have mites in your hive. And I think they see one, they say, you got mites. Maybe they're just not looking right, or not looking, maybe a low count, but mites are with bees. That's just for sure. That's a little bit of information from my state of Illinois and some beekeeping information from the state of Illinois. Hey, we're going to go now to change some agenda here. I want you to listen to a little bit. I was able to call Walt Wright about checkerboarding, and Walt is a very interesting individual. And I want you to listen to some of our conversation from Walt Wright from Tennessee and what he has to say about honeybees. Now, remember, it's just Walt's opinion and what he's experienced, so you have to take it all with a grain of salt. Don't take it all to the bank immediately. It's one man opinion based on what he's found and what he's doing. And so let's get right into that interview.
Do you have a time limit?
No, not really. I've probably only got about 15 or 20 minutes to talk with you.
The reason I ask is that there's nothing I'd rather do. I sometimes, you might regret having asked me to talk.
Well, I know. I'm a beekeeper myself, and it is fun talking about bees, isn't it? But we had a listener call in to our program, and he wanted to know what checkered boarding was. And I had never heard that particular terminology, and so I got to looking around on the internet, and of course your name came up. Everything to do with checkerboarding had your name on it.
it's my innovation, so I guess that's fair.
Yeah, so explain, what is checkerboarding?
Well, I started with that, 96.
Uh-huh.
And the idea was to break up the overhead honey barrier to expansion in the spring. What happens is the colony builds brood volume up to this honey reserve overhead. Now they're ready to start swarm prep. So the rationale at the time was if I broke up that overhead honey barrier, what would happen? It turned out better than I expected. Well, I call it the honey reserve because that's what it is. Stays that reserve through the swarm prep period, and then when they get into the next period, which I call the storage lull, they consume that reserve to replenish it with fresh honey. But up until repro cutoff, that overhead reserve is maintained if they can. I mean, if there's no field forage, they have to dip into it. But it's there in case they need it.
Okay, so let's say we have a hive, and it's got this honey reserve above it. How do you go about checkerboarding that hive?
Well, I break it up with alternate frames of empty comb. And they see that empty comb overhead, and they can't stand that. So they start putting nectar in that empty comb, and they grow the brood nest right through it then. So what you get is a much larger brood volume because they expanded the brood nest much further than they normally would.
And that gives you a greater volume of foragers to bring in nectar to them.
Exactly.
And I think that's what a lot of beekeepers don't realize is that, you know, you've got to find a way to get a lot of foragers on your team to bring in that nectar.
Well, actually, hive body reversal does that, but it still doesn't get them out of that mode of reducing the brood nest in swarm prep. Well, they rebuild it with nectar is what it amounts to. When you reverse hive body, they rebuild that reserve with nectar, and they're still in the swarm prep mode. They're still reducing the brood nest.
Oh, I catch it right. So what you're trying to do by checkerboarding is take away their impulse to swarm while expanding the brood nest at the same time, right?
A little different. What we're trying to do is get them to not start swarm preps. That turned out to be an after-the-fact development. I didn't expect that when I first started it.
Mm-hmm.
I thought if they put some nectar upstairs, they'd have less nectar to backfill the brood nest as the first step of swarm preps.
Mm-hmm.
But in actual fact, they just grew the brood nest right on through it, and that surprised me, but it turned out good because they build much bigger populations for the flow.
When you're talking about how they build the brood on into it, does that mean they're building their brood nest on into the second deep on top?
Worse than that. They'll keep on into another empty above.
Wow.
So, I mean, the equivalent, anyway, I use shallows above a basic deep, but the equivalent in deeps, I've seen is actually I've seen them exceed the equivalent of three deeps of brood. And that's where that extra population and the extra honey income. My interpretation of what I saw, even if you use comb to replace brood, unless you break up that overhead barrier, that is the honey reserve overhead, unless you break that up, you haven't discouraged them much.
Oh, I see.
Well, that's all the time we have for Walt today. We'll pick up his interview tomorrow for the rest of that. He has some more interesting things to say about beekeeping. And that's all the time we have for today's podcast and broadcast of Studio Bee Live. Thank you for joining us today. We appreciate you coming along with us and learning more about beekeeping. And listen, let me encourage you, if you're listening and you're thinking about becoming a beekeeper, then you need to get in contact with us. We're here to help you do it. We'll take you all the way through everything you need to know, including making sure you have all your supplies and your bees and your queens. We do it all. You don't have to keep searching the internet for all this divided up information. Just come on to us and let us take you through from A to Z. We'll get you going. So you can visit us on our website at honeybeesonline.com, or you can give us a call at 217-427-2678. We'd love to have you call us and place an order for your beehives. Do that as quick as you can. Let me tell you, friends, spring is coming, and I know it's cold, but it's going to be spring before you know it, and you don't want to wait until spring to start getting your stuff together for beekeeping. So order your hives today at 217-427-2678. We're going to begin taking orders for Package Bees January the 5th, same number. Give us a call, and we'll look forward to talking with you and helping you get everything in order for your beekeeping season. Well, from Long Lane Honeybee Farms, thanks for listening to Studio Bee Live. This is David and Sherry Burns encouraging you to behave yourself.